Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Good evening, everyone. It's Thursday evening, September 16th. We are ready to unload with Cal and Sam Pete, and we are live on WBTR, Blog Talk Radio. This is Ready to Unload, Episode 3 on WBTR, and I am your host for this evening, Cal, Brian Calvi. I am joined by Dr. E-Ray Statt on the line. Good evening, Dr. E-Ray.
How you doing, Cal? I've noticed we're missing somebody tonight.
We are missing somebody because this will henceforth be known as the tornado episode of Ready to Unload.
Flash. We don't often get flash floods and tornadoes in Long Island region, but
no.
Tonight we're getting them.
Yeah, and for those of you that don't know, we're based out of New York, Long Island specifically, and we were hit with some massive, massive thunderstorms and tornadoes, actually. Tornadoes actually touched down right in, actually at the home of Sam Pete, our buddy Sam Pete, Steve Sampietro.
I believe that's ground zero right now. There's a big, huge thing on CNN about Steve's house right now.
Yeah, if you put the television on, you're going to see people at Steve's house, and we may even get him to join in via CNN tonight, if we're lucky. But
as long as he promotes the show, I'm fine with it.
It's all that matters. He's got a Ready to Unload T-shirt on. He's going to be on CNN with Wolf Blitzer, and you know we're going to be huge out of this. No, but
yeah,
seriously,
it could be the best thing ever for us.
This could really, I mean, natural disasters. That's how you get big. But it's already starting out odd because we're on Thursday night. It's not Tuesday night, so we've already moved the show to Thursday night this week. And now we're dealing with acts of God. So we really, you know, really up against it this week.
People expected to hear the lovely dulcet tones of Sam Pete on Tuesday. They tune in on Thursday, and no Sam Pete.
No, and so. they hear my rough, hard voice.
Don't even get started about mine, but we push on.
We push on. And the latest from Sam Pete, who we hope to have call us, later on in the show, he's making every effort to get home and navigate the tree-lined streets of Queens. He's going to give us a call, and he will join the show later, hopefully. The latest word from Steve was that there's a tree down on a car in front of his house.
I think the latest was his car.
It was his car? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So we've got this is quite a start we've gotten to here. But you know what has been on my mind, Cal? You know, talking about natural disasters. How about the Jets on Monday night? Let's talk about it.
Well played, my friend. Well played. Talking about being up against it, we're going to start off with the New York Jets. And the New York Jets, well, let's just say it. They laid an egg on Monday night.
You know, Cal, I've been quiet. Obviously, I'm not the big talker on this show, but quietly I've been seething because when you go an entire off season basically shooting your mouth off and talking about how great things are going to be, going to the Super Bowl, we're the team to beat, I'm sorry, but that sets everybody up. You know, their expectations are huge, and you can't, and the reality is, and I was talking about this the other day, if they had gone out and played normal, you know, hadn't talked that way and lost to Baltimore 10-9, no one would say anything, but because they built it up so much and did the show, people are going nuts.
Well, you know, as you were saying this pretty much since last January, after they lost in the AFC Championship game to the Colts last year. And you know, all of the Jet fans that we know were kind of talking about it. But you in particular, I remember, you said the same phrase over and over and over again. When has this ever worked? When has talking big and running your mouth When has that ever, ever, ever worked in sports? And it's amazing how one game into the season, the Jets got all of that talk smacked right back into their face.
It magnifies the problem. You know, like, they have obviously some problems with the team, but because they talk this way about how great they were, it's 100 times worse. It just is.
Oh, yeah. Now, let's talk about the game a little bit on Monday night. They went into the game, a lot of energy in the crowd, but we're going to get to that later in the RTU fun load, because, again, our buddy Sam Pete, who's like, you know, he's like the world traveler. He's like, where's Waldo? He was at the game on Monday night. Where is Sam Pete? We don't know where he is right now. We know he was at the game on Monday night, and he's going to talk about the stadium experience, but they're kicking off the new stadium. The Giants opened it the day before with a win on Sunday against the Panthers. So the Jets had their opportunity, prime time, Monday night, 7 early games. So everybody just gets home from work. Everybody's excited. We were tweeting back and forth all day about how excited we were to see the game. And then you saw the Jet offense.
Well, if you remember, the Jet offense was terrible at the start. And it set a nice tone that we all kind of expected. Their offense had never clicked throughout the whole preseason. But they get the ball right back in great field position, and the minute they kick the field goal on that after the huge sack and recovery, every Jet fan across the land basically said, "Here we go. We're not going to win this game. I'm sorry." That's what I said.
Well, that was the first play on defense for Baltimore, right?
Yep.
When they sacked Flacco and they got the ball back, and now the place is going nuts. They just recovered the ball, defensive turnover in the Ravens zone. They're at where were they? Like the 11?
They were in the red zone.
They were definitely in the red zone, and then they went, you know, three and out. They didn't move the ball at all.
Score there.
You kicked the field goal.
You just have to score there.
Absolutely. Yeah. That would have set the tone for the game. It would have given Mark Sanchez and that offense a little more confidence, which they clearly had none that whole game. Let's be honest. They had no confidence in that game.
Well, I don't know if they had no confidence. All I know is that Sanchez right now is not the type of quarterback who can sit in the pocket and just do what he wants. He basically takes one quick look downfield and gets scared because he doesn't want to throw four picks like he did last year, and just, you know, basically check down. That's what he is right now. He's a check down quarterback who basically has no confidence in himself. I don't think the whole offense has no confidence. I think it's just Sanchez.
Well, I got two questions on that one. The first is, how much of that is a result of the way Brian Schottenheimer develops the game plan for him and treats him as a quarterback?
You know, obviously I don't know, but I'll tell you this. I think a lot of this whole thing about the coordinator is blown out of proportion. Listen, you put Peyton Manning with Brian Schottenheimer's game plan, he's going to do well. You know, he's a different quarterback. The problem is the quarterback. I'm sorry.
Right.
You know, Jet fans have been talking about the offensive coordinator for years. You know, years ago it was Paul Hackett, the worst offensive coordinator ever. You know, I understand he wasn't great, but at some point you have to say it's the player.
Well, I think it's a combination of the two, because the player is following the plan that's set forth for him, and the plan that has been set forth for him clearly indicates that the coordinator has no trust in the quarterback.
Is that true, or is Sanchez just checking down too soon?
Well, we don't know. You're right. We don't know that for a fact. As a fan and as a viewer, as I watch it, I'm looking at it as both sides are equally to blame. Now, the other question I had for you, I was thinking about it this week, is we're in an era where the media is everywhere and people go crazy over the littlest things. I mean, look, you would think the world was going to end over this one loss, and everybody blows every little thing out of proportion. Do you think, as a young quarterback now who does not have a lot of experience, do you think he's fearful of making a mistake to the point where, like you said, he checks down on every play because he doesn't want to throw an interception?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think he's in a locker room where a team was built specifically to win this year. Last year, I think he felt, and he rightfully so, that he cost them many, many losses. You know? And
I think he's
saying to himself, if I don't perform, I'm the reason this team doesn't go to Super Bowl. And you know what, Cal? I've been saying that since day one.
Yeah, you have been saying that.
And this team is going to go as far as Sanchez goes.
And we have to continue to remember, not that we should give him a pass for too much longer on this, but he's 23 years old. He's, you know, we watched 5 weeks of his antics during the summer on HBO. He's not the most mature 23-year-old out there. Would that be a good way to put it?
Yeah, that's perfect. Antics, perfect, yes.
Yeah, that's exactly what they were. So you got to remember that about him. And the third thing, I was thinking about this all week. The third thing brings me to Rex Ryan. Maybe Rex Ryan needs to have a better handle on what kind of kid he's working with here. He probably should have realized that this kid can't handle criticism too well before he set him up to be the next Joe Namath.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we could do a whole show on Rex Ryan and what he should and shouldn't say. You know, as far as, you know, another perfect example this week was him basically saying, Revis is going to cover Moss all game. I mean, come on, Rex. Do we have to give our entire defensive game plan away? Do we have to?
Yeah.
I mean, I got a problem with a lot of the stuff Rex Ryan says, and specifically the way he handled Sanchez. You know, this is a kid who's not really ready. He's in his second year. He needs to be handled very carefully, but at the same time, you know, they have, for some reason, you know, his whole demeanor shows someone who has no confidence right now.
Right. And we've seen that his entire – actually, no, I shouldn't say that. We didn't see it last year during that run in the playoffs. He looked like a different quarterback.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why that happened, actually.
It was strange.
Is that just a case of good matchups?
I don't know because, I mean, listen, he went into San Diego – on the road in an AFC divisional playoff game last year, and he was very poised for a 22-year-old quarterback with 17 games under his belt.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I think those two teams don't bring the pressure Baltimore does. I think, you know, I also think we're beating them up a little bit here. That's a very good defense he played this week.
Oh, yeah, it's quite possibly the best defense in football.
Everyone's kind of been giving Baltimore a hard time because their secondary's not so great. But you know what? Their front, you know, seven is ridiculous.
And Ray Lewis really, you know, backed up his words on Monday night.
By the way, he made us second guess the signing of Bart Scott instead of him, I'll tell you. I didn't even see Bart Scott that whole game.
No, Bart Scott was invisible.
I thought Brian Thomas flashed a lot, though. I was very impressed with him.
Oh, yeah, Brian Thomas had a great game. And even when Chris Jenkins went down, I thought Sione Puha played very well.
And he did it last year, and he's going to have to do it again. Jenkins, you got to feel bad for the guy.
What do you think? You got to think his career is probably over, right?
I can't imagine him doing the same thing next year. He was talking about retirement last year.
Yeah, and then he came back, and, you know, they built this team to make a Super Bowl run, and he came, yeah. He rehabbed to come back. It's so funny. I've got the image. The lasting image of Chris Jenkins, if we don't see him play again, is not going to be him writhing around in pain at the New Meadowlands, but it's going to be him hysterically laughing as he was driving that golf cart around on Hard Knocks. For some reason, for some reason that stuck with me.
Yeah, and unfortunately, what supersedes that is his harassing of the sideline reporter. That's going to probably be another lasting image.
Well, I didn't see that, so I'm going to pretend like that didn't happen.
Right, you have your own issues about that. We'll get into that later.
I'm getting started.
Madon. Just quote Steve Madon.
Oh, Minga. You
know, now, Cal, let me ask you a question here. The whole game I watched, you know, obviously as you did, we watched Bolden just go nuts on the Jets. Now, I understand their reasoning that they were kind of working Revis back into the game, but why didn't they switch him to Bolden in the second half?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, if they switch him to Bolden, then that leaves Mason open. And
you're telling me Derek Mason would have taken over that game the way Bolden did? Really?
I don't know if he would have. But what I do know is that Antonio Cromartie and Kyle Wilson did not have a good game, and I don't know if they would have had a good game regardless of who they were covering on Monday night. You know, there were 14 penalties in the game. Between the two of them, they had 8. You know?
They did.
Wilson
not
and Cromartie.
Not
a good start, but again, let's be fair to Kyle Wilson. I think they put him in a position that he wasn't ready for either.
No, that's for sure. I mean, obviously, to go back to Rex Ryan, I mean, they talked this kid up that he was basically equal to Revis. I mean, he was that good.
Yeah. You know, maybe it's time to back off a little bit on this bluster. And you know, Sanchez, it's you know, it's been ingrained in them to talk like this because Mark Sanchez was in an interview, I forget if it was yesterday or today. I don't know if it was on the heels of him criticizing Joe Namath, which is a smart move. But he says, you know what, it's one game, and we could still go 15-1. Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
It just don't stop.
I think that's the way the kid is. I mean, he's a cocky California kid. He's confident. He wants to try to portray the images that Rex Ryan and everybody on the team is doing. But just give it a rest. I mean, just play. You know, just play. How about just playing?
You know? Yeah, but he's cocky, but he's soft a little bit, no?
Yeah, he's a little soft. You know, listen, I love the guy. I want to believe in him. I wore my Sanchez jersey. Believe me, I did.
I believe you.
He's got the whole thing with him and a lot of quarterbacks is body language. And he walks into that huddle sometimes and it's just, he does not look like someone who could take over a game. And that, the whole team feeds off that.
1-877-404-0820. That's the number to call to join Cal. That's me, Brian Calvi, and Dr. E-Ray Stat on Ready to Unload. We're talking about the Jets right now. We're going to get into the Giants a little bit later on in the program and then do a little quick run around the NFL because it was an interesting first week as they usually are, huh, Dr. E-Ray?
Yeah, I mean, come on, it's football season. This is so exciting. I love everything about it.
Just the fact that football was back was great. Now, let's go back to the Jets a little bit because we need to look ahead towards this week. Could you have scripted a worse opponent to come in on the heels of the disaster of Monday night?
Did you catch any of the game? The past Bengals?
I did.
I watched that. That was a pretty impressive showing there, and I guess Wes Welker's healthy, huh?
Yeah, he looks like he's okay.
Yeah, I mean, that was just a dominating performance. I mean, I think it was 28-0 at one point. It was the Bengals had no chance. The Patriots clearly look like their offense is in full force. Listen, the truth is the Patriots are going to score a little bit, you know, against the Jets. I have no doubt about that. The problem is that the Jets have no offense right now. Did you feel that the Pats defense was impressive?
I wasn't that impressed with the Pats defense. I liked them early, but, you know, they gave up a lot of points late, but they were kind of like garbage points. They didn't really bother. I wasn't that impressed with the Pats defense.
Well, they got a bunch of turnovers, and they dropped a bunch of other interception potential, you know, passes from Palmer. They harassed him. I mean, I was actually pretty impressed. I think that everyone has been talking about how horrible this New England defense is and how it's going to basically hold them back. Listen, they're going to score 20-plus points a game every week. The defense just has to do a little bit, and I think that they are good enough. This is a bad matchup for the Jets.
Yeah, it's definitely a bad matchup because they're going to need to score. They're not going to hold the Patriots to under 20 points, I don't think, in this game.
Now, obviously, if I was in my usual position, I would normally be looking up stats right now because I really would like to see what Wes Welker's stats are against the Jets the last season.
Against the Jets? Oh, I'm sure they're ridiculous.
I mean, I'm not kidding. He could have 20 catches this week because, you know, Revis is going to blanket Moss. Brady will never throw in that direction because he's not stupid. And he's just going to, you know, Welker's going to go off.
Oh, Welker's going to go off. The tight ends are going to go off. They have,
you
know.
I don't know who the third receiver. Who is it?
For Washington, for New England, I don't know.
I have no idea.
It doesn't matter. I don't think they have a real big third receiver. I think they're.
I guess Kevin Falk is kind of their third receiver.
Out of the backfield. I think the tight ends are a huge option for Brady.
And how about Fred Taylor? Unbelievable. The guy's still going.
Man, it's only a matter of time before he gets hurt. But the Patriots should just ride him as long as they can. You know.
Yeah, well, you know they gave up Lawrence Maroney this week. They traded him to Denver.
Right.
You know, it seems that all of Belichick's proteges will take whatever scraps he leaves. Clearly, he did not turn out to be the first-round draft pick they wanted. They're going to go with Fred Taylor, Sammy Morris, Kevin Falk on third down, and then you got the greatest nickname of any running back in the NFL, the law firm, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis.
That's great. The law firm of Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. The Patriots are a bad matchup, and you know before the season we looked at the schedule and we looked at the way the Jets came out of the gate with the games against Baltimore, New England, Miami, and then the fourth game was that Minnesota?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, so So the first four games, the first quarter of the season was a tough, tough way to start the season. Now, if they were to lose on Sunday against the Patriots, they fall to 0-2, they fall to two games back in the division, then they have to go on the road to a really tough Miami team next Sunday night.
We could where they never play well.
Where they never play well.
And you basically got any wait, Cal, fourth week is you have to go into Buffalo where, again, they never play well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Then
that's
you
right.
Have Minnesota at home. Then you have Minnesota at home, and you got Denver on the road. I mean, Cal, where are they going to win? Tell me where they're winning.
Well,
I mean, I'm a Jets fan, obviously, and I'm built to panic. But tell me where there's an easy win there. Now, obviously, Buffalo's terrible. But the Jets have lost to bad Buffalo teams in Buffalo so many times.
There's no easy win at all in those first six games. None at all. I mean, if they went 0-6, it wouldn't surprise me.
Could you imagine?
I can't imagine.
I mean, if they go 0-6, I don't think they will. I think they'll probably beat Buffalo. They'll probably beat Denver.
2-4?
Although, you know, who knows? If they go 2-4 into the bye week, I mean, I think Rex's job is in jeopardy at that point. I know they love him, but don't you think?
No, I don't think his job will be in jeopardy at any point this year.
Well, Cal, let's say they go 2-4. They come out of the bye week. Guess who they got? They got Green Bay. Okay. They could be out of the playoff picture by the eighth week.
By Halloween.
Yep. By Halloween. Oh, you love it.
I love it. I love the fact that they play on Halloween this year too.
Oh man! Wow, I have suddenly just depressed myself.
Yeah, if you kind of lay it out, if you're a Jet fan and you're looking at the schedule and you're thinking about what's going on. Oh, by the way, Darrell Revis hurt his hamstring today in practice too.
Yeah.
While we're at it.
Awesome, awesome news.
Let's talk about that for a minute. Revis with the holdout. He held out for 30 some odd days. Was it 36 days that he held out?
Yes, I think so.
I forget what the exact number was. It was 30-something of Revis watch. He comes back, didn't get a lot of action on Monday night, and now talking about Moss still being a slouch. He made those comments last year, didn't back down from them this year, and then he goes out and pulls his hamstring today in practice.
Yeah, I know. I actually thought his quotes were pretty funny because, you know, he basically said Moss played like a slouch in the first meeting that they had. But he was very quick to say, oh, but he played great the next time. Dude, you can't do that, okay? You can't say stuff like that. It comes back and bites you. It just does. This Patriots team is going to be ready to play.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And remember, in the same exact spot last year, Patriots came into the Meadowlands, Giant Stadium last year, the second week of the season, and the Jets beat them 20-9, and it was really like the Super Bowl. The atmosphere at the stadium last year was unbelievable. The crowd got up for the game, the team got up for the game, and Brady was just coming back off of injury. They beat them 20-9. I don't see the Patriots coming into this game in the same position that they were this time last year.
Yeah, and you know what? The other thing I've been meaning to bring this up, the Jets' defensive philosophy of all-out blitz, I can't take it anymore, okay? Because you know what? Against a team like, you know, with Joe Flacco, who's a little bit young still, you know, it didn't work, okay? It didn't even work. Brady, when he's healthy, is going to pick apart this defense like he did in their second meeting. It's going to be a disaster if Rex continues to send the all-out blitzes. And the problem is he's not getting any pressure from his front four. But, you know, you can't send the house on a guy like Brady. He's going to pick you apart.
And you can't send the house when you got a guy like Kyle Wilson protecting in the secondary. He's not ready for it yet.
I used to think that a lot of what Rex Ryan said about his defense was just bravado and just kind of pumping his players up. But I think he actually says everything that he's going to do. And I don't really think that's a great idea.
He uses the old reverse psychology trick where the other person is thinking, he didn't actually just give away his game plan, did he?
Yeah, I would not be surprised if certain points during the game he just yells out, "Here's the blitz coming." I swear to God, I would not be surprised if that happens.
We're going to do a blitz.
We're going to come in here. Let's see you stop it.
We're going to send seven guys because they're the best seven guys in the history of the NFL and all that kind of stuff. And here they come. And I really believe that that's what's going to happen.
Wow, your Rex Ryan sounds a little bit like your Mike Francesa.
That's ironic. They don't get along.
Oh, that's ironic, considering what Francesa has been talking all week about. Oh boy, let's not get into that.
We can't even go there. But I don't know. I'm concerned. I think that now, on the flip side, and you know, just a couple more things on the Jets, and then we'll move on to the Giants. Again, the number 1-877-404-0820. Give us a call.
Well done.
Thank you. On the flip side, I think that if the Jets somehow pull out a strong performance on Sunday, it'll be even that more impressive. Wouldn't you say?
Obviously. Obviously it will. I'm sorry, but I just can't see them putting together an offense in 6 days when they had the entire offseason and training camp to do that.
Yeah, nobody's really
expecting. I just don't see happening. You know, and then obviously, you know, we could spend another 10 minutes talking about, you know, Sean Green basically, you know, being pulled from the game and not being reinserted back in. And now basically we're left with LaDainian Tomlinson, who did not have a good season last year as our starting running back at this point.
No, but you know, of the bright spots, the few bright spots from Monday night, I thought was Tomlinson. I thought his legs looked really fresh.
He looked good. Let's see how long is it going to last, though.
Yeah, well, that's
running backs, as they get older, they wear down.
Well, that's the thing, and the same thing with Jason Taylor. You know, you're asking Jason Taylor to take on a much larger role than you wanted him to. You're asking Tomlinson to take on a much larger role than you wanted him to. Are you pushing the envelope with these guys? I don't know.
I think you are.
And what about the rumor that, yeah, I've seen it in a couple of circles, and it hasn't exactly been shot down completely about Albert Haynesworth being brought in.
Oh, God, I really, really don't want that. I really don't
imagine?
Want, I mean, obviously he fills a need, but I just don't think the Jets need another gigantic, and I mean that figuratively and literally, personality in the locker room. I just don't think so.
And, well, the fact that he doesn't want to play nose tackle, why would they want to bring a guy in that doesn't want to play nose tackle? Let's do that. Let's bring him in.
Listen, they had a top defense without him last year. They have an ability to play without him. The pieces are there on defense. I'm not worried about the defense. By the way, they held Baltimore at 10 points, okay? You know, I think the offense is the problem. And we need to see what happens. You know, let's see what happens. Let's move on to an offense that was clicking a little bit last week. The New York Football Giants.
Dr. Segway tonight. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm taking over that role. Listen, you're the Stampede role. I'm taking over Dr. Segway.
That's, you know, that's why we're so successful on the show. We have depth, you know? We got a deep bench.
Watch, here I go again. Much like the Giants running back core.
Well done. Let's talk about the Giants and the number to call. Throwing it out there again, 1-877-404-0820. You want to call in and talk about the Jets? We'll go back to the Jets. You want to call in and talk about the Giants? We're going to talk about them right now. How about those Giants? How about the G-Men on Sunday at the Meadowlands?
Well done. By the way, before we get into the Giants, maybe we can get a Giant call to chime in on this, because I've been wondering about this. When did the Panthers become their rivals? I understand they've had some, you know, big games, but that's all I read about up to the week before this game.
Well, I think the John Fox effect is one thing.
That
right?
Certainly is, you know, plays a role, sure.
You've got John Fox.
They've had some big playoff games. And
they've had some
very important regular season games.
Yes. I mean, the Panthers embarrassed them in their Giant Stadium finale last year. I think the fact that they have two Steve Smiths contributes to the rivalry.
That certainly does help. And,
yeah.
It's amazing how in fantasy football leagues, if you had said Steve Smith for the Giants by accident in the second round a couple of years back, you'd have been laughed at.
Not so funny. I would love to know the guy that drafted the wrong Steve Smith, Mike Williams, and Adrian Peterson.
You think he's looking at his team right now going, what did I do?
He probably had a buddy go draft for him, and he wrote the names down for him. And the guy comes back and says, oh, dude, I got you all your guys. Take a look. And which guys did he get?
Oh, man.
I have no
sympathy for him because he should have been at his draft.
You know how
I feel about this.
Well, that's a topic for another day, is, you know, be at the draft. All right?
Exactly.
twice a year, football and baseball.
That's all that matters, you know, twice a year.
You'd be there if your kid was being born, right?
There you go. And that doesn't happen twice a year, hopefully. Thank goodness. Unless, of course, you are Antonio Cromartie. And we move on to the Giants.
So the Giants at Rainy Meadowlands on Sunday. It was an interesting game. I wasn't thoroughly impressed with the Giants early, but I thought they kind of settled in a little bit in the second half and they clicked. And Eli Manning, I think, has found a new favorite target in Hakeem Nicks.
You know what? I don't think so. He certainly used him a lot and scored 3 touchdowns. Obviously, he had a great game. I like Eli Manning a lot because I think that he doesn't cue into a receiver. I think he goes to the guy that's open. And last year, obviously, in the beginning, it was Steve Smith, all day long Steve Smith. And I think he noticed there was some shift in coverage toward Smith, and he just went for the open guy, and that was Nicks.
Well, but I think he likes Nicks. I think Nicks can be a factor in that offense.
Nicks, absolutely. Nicks,
you know, and I think you're going to see a lot more. I mean, it doesn't take a soothsayer to predict that Nicks is going to have a better season after watching him on Sunday. But I think that having Nicks as that legitimate option is going to give Eli Manning a lot more weapons to work with.
Yeah, certainly his maturation is huge. You got Nicks, Smith, and Manningham now. You got a pretty good receiving core. The only problem is their tight ends just can't stay healthy.
Nah, Kevin Boss got hurt. He had a concussion.
This is his third concussion since he's been in the league?
Yeah, that's the hot topic right now.
You got to start talking about retiring at this point, don't you?
Yeah.
From a medical standpoint, obviously he won't because that's not what happens. But, I mean, 3 concussions, I mean, they're starting to show data now that says that these concussions really play a toll on people later in life. And
right.
I just can't see, obviously this is his livelihood, but you know, you're talking about your head. Kind of important.
Yeah, well, it's kind of sensitive up there. And it's amazing to think back at some of the old players. Because nowadays they diagnose concussions a lot quicker than they would have in the past. Here, look at me. I'm talking to a doctor about medical information.
That's the way it is with a lot of medical conditions. You hear more about them because we detect them more. And certainly our ability to detect concussions and the effects afterwards have gone up. So you see a lot more of them. And I think that the effects afterwards are pretty dangerous. I mean, that's obvious.
Yeah. You got to be worried for Kevin Boss. Now, who's the tight end that they signed from the practice squad? His name is Bear.
Bear Pasco.
Bear Pasco.
Greatest football name in the past 10 years.
What a terrific name.
Oh, man, I hope he's good. I hope we've just ushered in the Bear Pasco era here in New York.
My God, could you imagine how popular a guy named Bear Pasco would be if he was even remotely good? You know?
I actually just I hope he is. I just looked him up. His real first name is McKenna. McKenna Bear Pasco. Fantastic.
McKenna? So is Bear his middle name?
I don't know if it's his God-given middle name, but it's his nickname, I would imagine.
Or is it his maiden name?
Now, I would think a guy named Bear would be from probably the Northwest, the Pacific Northwest or Alaska.
Yeah, watch, he's from Southern California.
He's from Porterville, Southern California.
Well, is he really?
Yes, he is. San Joaquin Valley.
Ah, right. He's a Valley kid named Bear.
He's a Valley kid, yes. Well, I'm wondering, he did go to, he's from California, maybe, I have no idea where this comes from. I can't even think of a big guy, I guess.
I'll give you the angle here. California, the mascot of the California team is the Golden Bears, right?
That's what I was going to say, but I wasn't so sure. I don't know my mascot that well.
I don't know if that's why, but I'm going to speculate. Why not?
I'm going to go with his 6'5", 260 frame, probably.
You know what? We can get away with this stuff with Sam Pete not here. You know?
That's right. God, I hope we're not alienating our Southern California audience right now. I really hope not.
Well, no, why? We're talking very favorably about Southern California, although we didn't really talk too favorably about Sanchez.
No, not a good point.
No.
So Bear Pasco gets his shot. Here it is.
So Bear Pasco, big shot. Sunday night
against with those paws. Grab hold with those paws and don't let go.
Swat them around like a fish in the water.
So, you know, the one thing that I'll tell you, just to go back to the game, I was pretty impressed with the Giants' defense. I mean, they held a very good tandem running back court to basically only about 80 yards between them.
Yeah, I liked what I saw out of that front line. I think Kenny Phillips was certainly you could see how they missed him last year. Kenny Phillips came back and he made a difference.
You and Sam Pete have been saying it from day one that we've been doing covering football on the show. Kenny Phillips is huge for the Giants' success this year. He's kind of the guy that's going to make a difference in that secondary, and I think having him back is absolutely huge.
Now, that being said, I think the fact that they went against Matt Moore, who probably was the only quarterback that looked worse than Mark Sanchez this weekend.
Yeah, he'd have a good day.
They were bad.
I think some other quarterbacks around the league would you know, be able to argue that a little bit. But Matt Moore was not good. But you know what? It's surprising to me that this team basically said Matt Moore is our guy. And, didn't go after anybody like a McNabb or Jason Campbell. Matt Moore was their guy. They were happy with him. They drafted their potential guy in Jimmy Clausen, but Matt Moore is their guy. Okay.
It's weird, but you're right, Ev, because it's weird. John Fox, in a lot of circles, you'll hear that John Fox is on the hot seat. John Fox has to have a big year to save his job. And they didn't really provide him with the best tools to save his job, if you think about it, unless they really believed in Matt Moore and he just had a bad game.
I don't know, honestly. Maybe they really believed in him. I mean, he certainly had a good stretch of games toward the end of the year last year, which is probably why they stayed with him.
Well,
but he did not look good.
No, he looked bad. He had a concussion also, though. So, I mean, a lot of concussions around the league this weekend.
And now Clausen's the number one over there?
I don't know if Clausen's going to start on Sunday. But I do know that Moore had a concussion. They diagnosed him with a concussion on Monday after the fact, which, a lot of people did kind of go, oh, well, that makes sense now after what happened.
Was he concussed before the game?
He may use that defense because you'd have to be concussed to throw that interception in the end zone that he threw in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, he was falling down. And he threw into triple coverage, and at one point he threw into five guys. In the first quarter, he threw a ball. I forget who he was trying to hit, but there were five Giants around the receiver.
I just like saying concussed.
Concussed, like as a verb?
Yeah. I think it's a fun word to say.
It is fun.
Like, oh, geez, I'm so sorry that I didn't get my work in on time. I was concussed.
I like that. You could also use it like as if you were threatening someone. I'm going to concuss you. Right?
Are you shaking your fist and stroking your mustache while you say that?
I'm waving my finger in your face, and it's not. I'm a concuss you. That's what I'm gonna do.
I'm a concuss you. I like it.
I'm a concuss.
Well, let's take a look at the Giants get the win in week one. Now they go to Indy.
Yeah.
And for the Battle of the Mannings, the annual Battle of the Mannings, you got to love it.
Well, it wouldn't be annual. It would be whatever every 4 years would be, like maybe the presidential Battle of the Mannings.
There you go, embarrassing me on national radio again. Thanks.
Well, I'm not embarrassing you. Every 4 years. They've only met once before.
Certainly this is a huge game for the Giants, already week two. To go with the Indians, basically show what they can do. Indy lost a tough game against Houston, who could finally be for real this year.
We'll get to that
a little bit later.
Yeah, we've been waiting for them to do what they need to against Indianapolis, and they finally did on Sunday.
Yes, they did. Now, Indy should be ready to go for this one at home. What do you see this week coming up for the Giants?
I cannot, for the life of me, any way that I look at this game, and I can analyze it, and I can look at statistics, and I can look at game plans, and I can figure out, who Archie Manning is going to root for and who Cooper Manning is going to root for and the lovely wife, I forget her name, who they're going to root for. Well, I look at this from seven ways to Sunday. I'll just throw that in there. I cannot see Peyton Manning losing this game. I can't. Ev.
Yeah, this is the ideal type of game for Manning. You know how he is on the night game on Sunday night, as my fantasy teams over the years with Dallas Clark have reaped the benefits. And this is his perfect setup for a win. He lost last week. He's at home. It's a night game. I think Indy takes this one. And I think they take it big. But, you know, we'll see. Giants could be better than we think. Yeah, that whole division is a little bit on end from what I thought it would be. Just after week one, you know, basically you got Washington, the Giants winning in week one, and you got the Eagles and Dallas losing.
Right, and we'll get into the Washington-Dallas game, because that was another, I don't know if you watched that game on Sunday night. That was amazing.
And I didn't catch that one.
I
had to give up football.
You had to give up football?
Just at some point, I had to start doing some things around the house.
See, I had there was a craft fair in town, so I was the beneficiary of the house being free for most of the day.
Oh, that's right. We talked about that. What a perfect setup for week one.
It was great.
Man.
And also, I told you about this, I have DirecTV, and for the first week of every football Sunday, every football season, the first Sunday, they give you a free preview of the Sunday ticket. So, on the 1 week where I had the house to myself for most of the day, I also had access to all of the games.
That's fantastic. Now, let's talk about this for a second, Cal. What's to stop you from just dropping a few hints about another craft fair being available this Sunday?
Well, I'm sure.
Why don't you start planting that seed now? The kids, I'm sure, had a great time. Maybe they want to go again.
I'm sure if I scour the community bulletins across Long Island, I could find a craft fair every week. Sure, I could.
Now we're talking.
I have barked up the Sunday ticket tree enough times to know that I am never getting the Sunday ticket. But for one glorious week, it was magical. I have to say.
Yeah, that is heaven.
You know, it's got.
Let me ask you a question. When you saw a lot of the games this week, then. So let me ask you a question about what teams impressed you this week?
What teams impressed me this week? In the games that I was watching, New England certainly impressed me. They looked dominant. Tennessee looked unbelievable against Oakland. Now, Oakland looked bad, but Tennessee looked good. It wasn't just that Oakland didn't show up. Tennessee really had a great game. Chris Johnson was his usual self. Vince Young has a deep threat now in Nate Washington that he hit Nate Washington for a long touchdown in that game. And Tennessee just looked solid on Sunday.
Yeah, and Vince Young basically did exactly what he does best. He didn't throw a lot. When he did throw, he completed passes. He moved around the pocket. Chris Johnson is unbelievable. I mean, he is just incredible. Tennessee team is better than I thought it would be, and I thought they were going to be good.
Yeah, they're gonna have a great year this year. And there was some debate a couple weeks ago about between Chris Johnson and Adrian Peterson, who's the best running back. And Adrian Peterson says it's him, and Chris Johnson says it's Chris Johnson. Chris Johnson is the best running back in the NFL, hands down. You know, they have the offensive line that really helps them out. You know, they were pushing the front line of Oakland around all afternoon on Sunday.
I mean, that's the key. I mean, often said when talking about NFL, they got to control the lines. You really do. So now let me ask you a question: who else did you catch? Any Pittsburgh? How about New Orleans or Green Bay? These are the favorites. What do you think?
Well, we watched New Orleans on Thursday night, and which we haven't talked about that yet. The first game of the season, Thursday night, New Orleans and Minnesota. The Saints didn't impress me that much. I got to be honest.
Yeah, well, again, here's another situation where of basically two very good teams play each other, and Minnesota's got a very good defense. So I don't know if you basically say the Saints are different this year. I think they just ran into a team with a very good defense who also had a lot to play for because, you know, revenge factor. I wouldn't be surprised if New Orleans just goes off this week.
Well, they're going to be in San Francisco on Monday night, and they're retiring Jerry Rice's jersey on Monday night in San Francisco. So I'm just throwing that out there as an intangible emotional effect to the game.
So you're basically saying that that's going to rile up the 49ers. Huh? So you think of the 49ers, who looked so bad, I mean really, really bad in week one, you think they got a chance in that game?
No, not at all. I'm just saying it's a
You just like start it up. I like it.
Look, there's one thing that I've learned about emotion. You know, you think about, like, the Saints. Saints are opening the season at home. They're raising the Super Bowl banner. The fans are going crazy. Same thing with the Jets, the Giants. Every emotional aspect of a game that you could think of, that emotion, I've learned, is over within 5 minutes. Because the fans expend all their energy at the beginning of the game, and then whatever emotional boost there is, you see initially. And if that other team can withstand it, it doesn't matter who the team is, but if the opposing team or the visiting team can withstand that initial burst of emotion and just settle the crowd down, it becomes a whole different game. So I don't put a lot of stock into that emotional aspect.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that a lot of that is overblown. I think that they definitely, after the first few minutes, everyone kind of gets deflated, and then it just boils down to, who's going to win the game. Now, let me ask you a question. Who looked really bad this week?
Well, the 49ers looked really bad.
I can't believe Seattle won that game. I thought Seattle had to be one of the worst teams in the league. I really did.
I thought Seattle was going to be horrible. Seattle didn't look great. San Francisco looked horrible. And welcome back to the NFL, Pete Carroll, who made an idiot out of himself upon his return to the NFL.
Well, I missed it. What did he do?
He was running around like a lunatic, like he was still coaching a college team. Running on the field, jumping on guys, patting them on the head. I mean, the typical Pete Carroll emotion. But he was just an idiot.
Yeah. I'll tell you, man, he's not a dumb guy, though. He got out of USC at the right time.
No, he's smart.
He saw the writing on the wall. He knew exactly what to do.
Yeah, he did. He got out definitely at the right time. You know, the one thing
that I don't think he was waiting his whole life for the Seahawks job. I just don't think so. A team with no stud running back or quarterback.
Yeah. No, and then they trade their wide receiver in preseason.
Yeah,
that was his dream job. The one thing that I was thinking about today also was, look at a lot of the before the season started, which was really only a week ago. But if you look at the consensus picks to make the playoffs in both leagues, think about some of the teams that you would have no doubt. Just a lock to make the playoffs. You would have said the Colts, the Chargers,
right.
The Jets, even the 49ers in the NFC. There's another team.
You could even say the Bengals. You could even say Atlanta. These are Dallas.
Dallas. That was the team. Dallas.
Yeah.
The common theme there is that I wonder if these teams didn't go into the first game of the season not as sharp as they should have been because they believed the hype that was written about them. What do you think about that?
I think that's probably true. And also, perhaps they were shooting a reality show during training camp. maybe that could have affected things a little bit. I don't know. Maybe.
You don't think they were focusing on preparing for the season?
No. I think they were focusing on a certain Spanish-speaking reporter's backside for a lot of the camp, it seems. apparently running plays towards her is very good for preparing for a week of football.
You know, if they would have run one of those plays in the game, they might have scored. They might have scored. You know?
Maybe
that's what they need to do. They need to have her walk down the sideline and then just run the play towards her.
I'll tell you, man. Don't get me started. Anyway,
instead of they were like, we don't really need to study Baltimore schemes for week one. Instead, let's go fill up the quarterback's car with styrofoam peanuts That's probably a better use of our time.
They do that.
They did that on Hard Knocks.
I missed the last two episodes. It just got too difficult for me. I am not a fan of that. I love the show, believe me, but I love the show when it's not my team.
So apparently Mark Sanchez likes to play pranks on the team, and like Brian Schottenheimer was saying, and again, this is a look into the mind and the wit of Mark Sanchez. He thinks it's funny to draw mustaches on the children of Brian Schottenheimer in his family photos.
Hysterical. I love it.
So Brian Schottenheimer decided he needed to pay him back, and they filled his truck. I don't know what kind of truck. It was an SUV. They filled it with styrofoam packing peanuts.
That's awesome.
And hilarity ensued.
Yeah, certainly. I wish they had spent that time that they had collecting styrofoam peanuts and formulating some sort of game plan against Baltimore. Would have been great. Would have been awesome.
Well, they didn't do that. But just no. Go ahead.
No, we can't keep going back to them because we could just go on all night.
We could, and I'm sure we'll have plenty of opportunities over the next 16 weeks to do this.
Yes, because as we've already predicted 2-4 or 0-6 as the only two possibilities for the next.
That's right. Right. The optimistic view would be 2-4.
Yeah.
But just going back to the point, and so you agree with that some of these teams maybe weren't as prepared as they should have been for the first week.
I think that every year you see this. Every year you see teams that clearly are ready to play and teams that aren't. And it's something that I always remember with the Parcells teams. Parcells team coach teams always were ready to play right away. And then there were certain teams like the Herm Edwards teams, which never were ready to go. It just seemed like certain teams know how to get ready and some don't. And I you see that every year, you know, like Buffalo, they're just never going to come out of the shoot hot. It's not going to happen.
So you put that on the coaching staff more than the players then?
I think a lot of it has to do with preparation. I think it's more than we as fans realize.
Okay. I could see that. The number to call, 1-877-404-0820. We're talking NFL right now on Ready to Unload with Cal and Sam Pete, but there is no Sam Pete. It's Cal and Dr. E-Ray Stat. Sam Pete is the victim of a natural disaster tonight.
All right, let's not make it sound so dramatic, like a cheesy movie. No, but I actually did just get an update. Steve did return to his home finally to find a 40-foot tree in the driveway. So, he is not making this stuff up, folks. There was a possibly pseudo-tornado touching down in Queens tonight. Apparently, right on Steve's house.
Oh, my goodness. But everybody's okay. Is that? Can we report that?
Everybody seems to be okay, and I believe the power is still out. So I'm not sure if we're going to be getting to the Pete's side. Hopefully, he'll call in soon.
Hopefully. Now, you know, not for nothing, he doesn't need power to use his cell phone.
That's true. So you're basically putting the onus on him that he must call. I like it.
I'm just saying, you know, everybody's okay. There's no lights. There's nothing else he can do. Why not? Come give us a call.
You get home, power's out.
What are you going to do?
First thing you should do after looking around and making sure everything's okay is call into the radio show. I love it.
Yeah, because what are you going to do? The first thing you would have done was log on to the computer and check your fantasy scores or something like
right.
that.
Right. So that's out.
So that's out. So what's he going to do? You know, he's not going to watch TV. You know, Mad Men's not on tonight.
Nope.
So he can't watch that.
His favorite show of all time, that's out.
Right.
He's not going to read. No, even though he is a big reader, he's just not going to do it. He's been a long day.
He's an avid reader, I would say.
He's an avid reader, big-time reader. So I think what he's going to do is he's going to take a look around, you know, make sure his wife's, you know, comfortable, and then call in. So hopefully he'll get us soon. And,
maybe we'll catch
when
him.
He does,
maybe, yeah, we'll catch him maybe after the top of the hour, which is coming up.
Oh, I love it. You know, we probably should, at this point, should probably move away from football a little bit. I don't know what else. Is there anything else you want to say about the what many believe is the new national pastime of our country?
Well, the only thing I was going to say about football was just that. The first week of the football season is just there's just such a different feeling in the air. You know, this week here in New York, the weather was a little cooler. It was a clear sign that summer is long gone, and football is here. It's so popular now, especially here in New York. You got the Giants and the Jets. The Jets have been hyped up so much. The Giants, actually, one of the few times you'll see the Giants fly under the radar, you know, and they're flying under the radar, and they could quietly have a good season, you know.
Well, I think last year was an aberration. I think they had a very good team, you know, the year before. I think last year was just a little bit unusual for them. I think their team's very good. We'll see what happens. And the other thing you have to mention, though, Cal, is obviously being in New York, we don't care about college football. Sorry, we just don't. There isn't a college football team that we, any of us, really root for unless we went to a school that has a big college program. So it's basically football right now and baseball playoffs. That's really it.
And it's NFL. It's not really college. I mean, now there are – please, this is not meant to disparage anybody who's listening that's a fan of college football, because college football does have its place in sports, and it can be extremely exciting. And, you know, as a sports fan, I have no problem watching a college football game that is exciting. A couple years back here locally in our area, Rutgers actually made a run with Ray Rice. Ray Rice was the running back for Rutgers at that point. And it was incredibly exciting, you know. It's a rare occurrence for a college football game to kind of grab the attention of our area.
Right. Obviously, anybody who's listening to the show from outside of New York is saying to themselves, "These guys are excited by Rutgers. They obviously don't care about college football." And I'll be the first to tell you, I don't care less. Honestly, like I'll watch a big game. I watched a little bit of Notre Dame, Michigan, just to see what happened. I just don't care. I didn't go to a college football school. It's just not my thing. But I get it. I totally get it. I get the excitement, you know, that people, you know, experience.
Absolutely. And I sort of envy the diehard college football fans who are big NFL fans, because they get both days of the weekend of just huge football action.
Right. But you know what? I want to mention this real quick, because this is so important. I can't get into college football. The number one reason, by far and away, is the playoff system. It's number one. Because I didn't go to a college basketball school, you know, that was gigantic, yet I love college basketball because of the way the playoff system is set up. If college football had something like that, I would be totally into it. What do you think?
I think that's an excellent point, because it's just so darn confusing. You know, there's so many teams. First of all, there's so many teams that are in the mix. And when you get to the end of the season, and then, number two, the season ends before Thanksgiving, and then they don't play again for, like, 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's ridiculous to me. I can't stand that. They haven't played for a month and a half, some of these teams.
No, it just kills any momentum that they have. But, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. If they came up with some sort of system to clearly define a national champion, I think you'd get a lot of the casual sports fans would jump on the college football bandwagon, because there'd be, you know, you watch a big game, you want to know what kind of, what's at stake. You know, you want to watch two teams that are actually playing for something tangible. And in some cases, you're watching these bowl games and you don't even know, what they're playing for, you know?
Yeah, I have no idea about the BCS other than the fact that if you're not a BCS team, you're screwed. That's all I know.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, as you say, what even qualifies someone as a BCS team? I don't even know.
Apparently being in a big conference, that qualifies you. But the problem I have, Cal, is that I don't want to root for a sport where there's only certain teams have a gigantic advantage and others don't, okay? That's one of the major problems I have with some, you know, this is going to go off on a tangent here, but, you know, like Formula One racing, like the teams with the really good, you know, sponsors and cars, they have the best chance at winning. For the most part. So in college football, if you're not BCS, you're in trouble. In college basketball, you know, you can be a Cinderella and win the whole thing.
That's
not
true.
Not usually, but you can. It's possible.
The other thing in college football is that if you run up the score on an opponent and you beat them, you know, 62-10, you're going to get more points towards your ranking. You know, it's actually going to affect your standing.
And that's just ridiculous. I'm sorry. You know, I mean, I could talk all day about how much I dislike it. That's probably the big problem I have with college football.
Yeah, I think you got a great point there, because you want to, you know, You watch the NFL, you watch in the playoffs, you know one team wins, they move on, or they win the championship. One team loses, and they go home. Right?
Right. Exactly.
1-877-404-0820. Top of the hour, 10 o'clock here in New York on Thursday night, September 16th. It's Ready to Unload with Cal and Dr. E-Ray Statt. Hopefully we'll get Sam Pete on a little bit later. And we have just spent the last hour talking football. If you want to call in, talk a little more football, we'd be glad to talk some football with you. But right now, we're talking about the weather. We're talking about anything. But right now, we were talking about the weather changing here in New York, and that symbolizes the NFL season, but that also symbolizes the beginning of the Yankee playoff run in New York. And let's talk a little baseball now, Ev, and the Yankees and the Rays just finished. You know, everybody talks about there's no race, there's no drama left in the American League because they're both going to the playoffs. Those three games were pretty dramatic, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I remember you guys asked me a couple of weeks back, like, does this feel like a playoff run to you? Does Tampa seem like an equal rival? And I kind of blew it off. I was like, it's early. This weekend was fantastic. This was a playoff series. That's what it was. I watched pretty much every inning, and it was an exciting series all the way through. And Tampa, you know, Tampa played well, and they got the lead right now.
Did you sense that Tampa was really playing to win these games, even more so than the Yankees?
I think they probably played with a little more desperation. You know, the Yankees are an interesting team right now. They have a lot of young subs, a lot of guys that haven't experienced this before. They have a couple of injuries right now. You know, they're missing Pettit. It's an interesting team. I'm not so sure they're playing with the kind of desperation that Tampa is. And, you know, a lot of my diehard Yankee friends have been saying for weeks this is a different team than last year that they don't feel is going to go very far. I don't know if I agree. I still think they're the first or second best team in the American League. But I agree. Tampa is a much, much hungrier team, in my opinion.
What are the reasons that everybody kind of feels like the Yankees are not going to go as far this year? Does it just boil down to starting pitching?
I think their offense, for some reason, hasn't clicked for a couple of weeks now. I just don't really know why. You know,
you had a lot of injuries, you know? People in and out of the lineup.
That's what it's been. It hasn't been like one guy's been out for a long time other than, you know, A-Rod for a while. It's been like a lot of little nagging injuries where a key player, when he was hot, goes down, and then you lose that hot bat for a little while.
Right. And I think missing Swisher is really affecting them right now. Swisher and even Gardner. I think the two of them are kind of like the heart of this team right now.
Those are the two guys I was thinking about. They have been, you know, two of the best, you know, consistent players all year for the Yankees. They just really have. You know, you're basically taking two guys with 400 on-base percentages out of your lineup every day.
Right. And it's not so much even that they have been the most consistent, but they're really like – they're kind of like the grit and the guts of this team right now. You know, you got your big, the high-priced, big-name superstars, A-Rod and Teixeira and Jeter, and then you got the Gardners and the Swishers who are just like, they're the ones that are like the heart of this team right now. It's from my opinion, at least.
No, I agree. I don't know if they're the, you know, I still think Jeter's right there, but you know, he's not having a great year at all. We'll get into that in a little bit. But I agree. I think those guys have carried this team for a very long stretch. You know, certainly, you know, with A-Rod being down, you know, Cano also has stepped it up pretty big.
Cano has had an unbelievable year. Looking at these two teams, the Yankees and the Rays, which team is a better team right now if you look at the two of them?
I still think the Yankees are. Honestly, I do. I think the Rays pitching is probably a little bit better. Their lineup, to me, seems beatable. It just does. To me, their lineup seems possible to shut down in the playoffs. It just does. I feel like they could shut them down easily with good pitching performances. And the Yankees have pitchers to do that. I don't think the Yankees really, when it comes down to it, are going to be shut down by the Rays pitchers, who they usually hit well.
That's true. I'm not that familiar. How do they do against James Shields?
You know, they hit James Shields around a little bit. They usually do. It's Price they can't touch.
Yeah, Price is good.
Everyone else they usually get to.
And the other thing about the Rays is they have Soriano this year coming out of the pen closing games. And
that's a huge difference. It's a huge difference.
Somebody was talking about it on the radio. No, go ahead.
Well, I'm trying to remember who their closer last year was. I can't think of it.
They started with Troy Percival.
That's who it was, right.
And then Percival got hurt at the end of the season. I don't know who they finished with, but somebody was on the radio today and brought up a very good point that I heard. The Yankees have always been, no matter who they played or whatever the matchup was, the Yankees always had a clear-cut advantage at the end of the game because they had Mariano Rivera, who's the best closer of all time. Now, I'm not saying, and this caller also was not saying that Rafael Soriano is Mariano Rivera right now, but he closes that gap significantly enough to the point where I don't think the Yankees have – I think Soriano now is better than Papelbon ever was for Boston.
Wow, that's a pretty big statement. Papelbon was pretty good there for a little while. I definitely think he's been good, but I don't trust Soriano. He's done nothing to make me say that he's going to do what Rivera or Papelbon has done in the playoffs. You know, Papelbon's got 2 World Series.
Oh, you're right. And you're right. You can't put 100% trust in Soriano, but he's just been, he's been unbelievable all season. And I think that plays a big part in these games. If Tampa can take a lead into the ninth inning against the Yankees, it's not a foregone conclusion that the Yankees are going to come back anymore.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the bats are going to eventually be there once everyone's healthy. I really do. It comes down to pitching a lot. It really does.
Well, and speaking of pitching, Andy Pettit is going to pitch on Sunday. He's coming back. They're kind of through now. He's Andy Pettit. He's been through this how many times? He's a veteran. He's a gamer. He's gonna give you a good effort. But are they throwing him into the deep end here and expecting too much out of Pettit as they head to the playoffs?
Absolutely. You're basically Pettit was the guy that you basically signed for another 1 year contract. He's going to be your third or fourth starter, dependable guy. He was not the guy you needed to basically stabilize the rotation at this late in the season. What can we say about him right now? What can we say he's going to do? Everyone keeps saying, when Pettit comes back, we'll be fine. We have no idea what he's going to be like when he comes back. He was having a great year before he got hurt. Now what? After a month and a half off? I just don't know.
You know, I was of the opinion that the time off wasn't really going to hurt him. In fact, it might have even helped him. He's 38 years old. You give him a month off in the middle of the season, maybe he's fresh.
That's what Girardi says. That's right? What Girardi basically is spouting right now.
Yeah, but I think you're cutting it too close now. Now I think you're putting him in games that mean too much. I think if he had come back maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, he could have ramped up a little bit and been ready for the playoffs. Now they're just throwing him right in.
Well, as it is right now, if he starts Sunday, he's basically going to get 3 starts before the playoffs. That's correct, right?
If he starts on Sunday, he would pitch Sunday.
I think it's 3 or 4.
I think it'd be 4.
Okay. Yeah, listen, that's a month, basically,
Yeah.
That's 3 or 4 weeks. That's not a bad – I think that could be enough time for him to get ready. And then basically you go into the playoffs with CeCe, Pettit, Burnett, and possibly Hughes in your rotation.
CeCe, Pettit, Burnett. Well, your fourth starter, I think it'd have to be Hughes. I don't think it's going to be Vasquez.
No, it's definitely not going to be Vasquez, but, and I don't think there's any chance it's going to be, Ivan Nova. I think it's going to be one of those, it's going to be Hughes if needed. But last year, if you remember, the Yankees went to that 3-man rotation and just had CeCe pitching constantly. And I remember saying, well, there's no way they're going to let that happen again. And here we are, and it's very possible this happens again.
Well, you've got to remember, last year they were able to set their rotation up going into the into that series against Minnesota because they had an extra day off built into the schedule.
And they had clinched it.
So they were able to set it up so that they only needed the 3 pitchers. And then there was also – it was like they played 1 game – then they were off. Then they played the second game. Then they were off again. They wound up having an extra day off built into the schedule, which allowed them to go with the 3 starters. But you're right. Every time you turned around, Sabathia was pitching in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, and that basically came down to we can only win with Sabathia. That's what it was. And look what's happened a year later. It's the same exact thing.
It's the same exact thing. And you know, last year, A.J. Burnett pitched a gem against the Phillies in the World Series that nobody saw coming. I don't think you could even remotely expect anything like that this year out of Burnett.
No, I don't think you can expect it, but I think he needs. I think he's capable of doing it, there's no doubt.
Oh, definitely. He's definitely, I mean, his stuff is still good.
I'm so sick of hearing that, by the way. I'm so sick of hearing about how great his stuff is. You know, at some point, you have to just stop, you know, just stop being an idiot. And if you have great stuff, just figure out how to use it properly. If your problem is not your stuff, then it's your head. That's what it is.
But he's got good stuff. You know? Can match his stuff up with anybody.
Yes, that's what I hear. I heard all about it.
Have you heard about it? Has anybody mentioned his stuff? Because he's got filthy stuff.
I heard he's got filthy stuff, and you know, pound for pound, he's, you know, his stuff is as good as anybody's in the league.
Oh boy! Now, let's talk a little bit about Boston. I know you're feeling.
Yeah, I was gonna bring this up. You know, I can't see it happening. Do you think Boston has a chance? They're six games out with 15 to play.
I think it was six games out with 16 left.
16 left.
Yeah, that's nothing like that has ever happened in New York, so that can't possibly occur, right? A New York team couldn't possibly blow that kind of lead with 16 games left.
I don't think that's possible. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, it's never happened. So I think the Yankees have nothing to worry about.
I know you've been trying very hard to not bash your team tonight. That's a nice little dig there. Very nice.
I'm trying, but I had to get a little dig in. Hey, just real quick, K-Rod.
They've won three in a row, by the way.
They have won three in a row, and do you possibly, I know you're multitasking tonight, but do you possibly have a score on their game tonight against Pittsburgh?
You know me better than that. Of course I do. The Mets are winning 4-2 in the bottom of the eighth.
Well, how about that? The Mets winning 4-2 in the bottom of the eighth. They could sweep a four-game series from Pittsburgh, and then they get the Atlanta Braves this weekend with an opportunity.
Listen, I'm putting an end to this right now. Listen, I'm not going to let – you know, normally you and Steve would probably go on for 15 minutes talking about how they're only nine games out. Listen, it's over. It's over. Let's get back to the Yankees here.
They mathematically are not eliminated. But, no, what I was going to say was the Mets have an opportunity to finally pay the Braves back a little bit by taking care of business this weekend. The Braves are the Braves are falling, and they're desperately trying to regain their footing and hang on in this race in the National League. And now if the Mets could kind of like push them over the ledge, the season wouldn't be a total loss for me.
Wow. That's what you've come down to?
Yeah.
You're pinning your hopes. You're pinning your entire season on this Atlanta weekend. Okay, well, listen, you got to take something out of it.
Listen, I did.
Certainly with Santana going down, this has not been a good end of the season for the Mets here.
No, my hopes were firmly pinned on the back of Henry Mejia for the rest of the season.
Boy.
And then he goes down yesterday with a shoulder injury.
Can this fan base get excited about a rotation that starts with as the number one ace, R.A. Dickey? Can this fan base survive the number one, the opening day pitcher of R.A. Dickey?
He's been remarkably consistent, but no.
Fantastic. You're not going to get any arguments from me. But
no.
Let me rephrase. Is he the guy that you're going to see tons of Dickey jerseys opening day at Citi Field next year?
Yeah, wouldn't, you know, like in January when you get the promotional materials from the team and they put the pictures of the players on it, am I going to open up my envelope and see R.A. Dickey selling me on the 2011 Mets?
Is he on the cover? Let's be honest. Is he on the cover next year?
He'd have to be, I guess.
They got to sign him. They got to sign him, though, right?
Well, yeah, he's arbitration eligible. So okay. I think
somebody's up for a raise.
Yeah, he would stand to do very well in arbitration this year. So the question becomes: Do you try to save some money and sign him to a long-term contract? Or do you just let the arbitrator decide how much money he earned this year? Knowing the Mets, they'll sign him to a three-year contract, and he will win one more game the rest of his life.
How old is R.A.?
He's 36.
He's 36, okay. He's actually, you know what? He's only, this is incredible, he's about 10 or 12 days older than me.
Is that true?
I'm looking at it, he's October 29, 1974. He's not much older than me. God, he looks 40.
So he's not 30, so he's not yet 36. I'm sorry.
Not yet 36, 35. Sorry about that. He'll be 36 next year. But let's, 11-6, 2.80 ERA. The guy's been phenomenal.
Yeah, it's true. If somebody laid those stats out for you and said, hey, take a look at the year that this particular pitcher had, and then you're reading the line and you're like, oh, wow, this is really good. And then you scan over to the right to reveal a picture of R.A. Dickey next to those stats.
I'll tell you what, though. I think he looks like 90% of the people, the Met fans I see at Citi Field. he's the everyman.
But he's not. He's actually much more intellectual than your average Met fan. And I can say that.
That's true.
As a Met fan.
Hey, listen. Just going back to the Yankee game, I have to bring this up just because nobody's a bigger Jeter fan than myself. I'm a diehard Jeter fan. I like the way he plays the game.
Are you talking about Derek Jeter?
Oh, nicely done. I knew that was coming. I'll tell you what. Did you see the fake hit by pitch last night?
I did. I saw what happened.
I'm sorry. That's disgraceful in my eyes. I played baseball a long time ago. I know you have to get on base. You want to win a game. I just don't think I tried to see if I would ever do that, if I could put myself in those shoes. I probably would have been like just standing there, and just waiting to hear what he said. There's no way I would have put on a whole song and dance, grabbed my arm, had the trainer come out. You know what I mean?
Let me ask you a question. If it's you're at the plate, a 3-2 count in a big spot in a game, and there's a borderline ball on the outside corner that could go either way, do you drop your bat and immediately go to first?
I never really did that. I would probably start to make a move a little bit, but I would never like throw my bat and start running. I've seen guys do that. I would never do that.
Okay, but could you see how somebody would do that?
Sure, of course.
Okay, you're in an NBA game. And you're pounding down low in the paint. That's how they say it, right? When you're talking about the NBA.
That's how the kids say it.
That's how the kids say it. And, the guy that you're guarding has the ball, and he turns, and his shoulder hits you, and you just like, and you flop down on the ground to try to take a charging call. You see that all the time.
That's a totally different. You can't compare those two sports. You might as well tell if you're in the World Cup, and you got the ball, and you're dribbling down the field, and some guy slides into you, and you roll on the ground for 10 minutes. That's the way those sports are. Taking a charge is part of the game.
Right.
In baseball, to me, there's no place for putting on an entire routine for, say, you got hit by a pitch. Obviously, if it worked for him in that situation, the next batter, Granison hit a home run, and they took the lead briefly. But I'm sorry, man. That's just not the way I play the game. Would you do that?
No, I wouldn't do it, but I can understand a certain amount of gamesmanship and where you're trying to gain an edge in a situation like that.
So what happens if A-Rod does that?
Did you see what I just did there with Jeter gaining an edge?
Yeah, I saw that. That is, by the way, the most annoying commercial of all time. If anything ever was to tarnish Jeter's image, I don't think it would be like a sex scandal or anything like Tiger Woods. I think it would be the legacy of that Edge commercial and this fake hit by pitch.
Derek Jeter?
He's got an edge. He's got an edge. Then there's that one guy, I think he says it in Spanish.
He does. I don't even know how to say it in Spanish, but you're right.
And we took many years of Spanish together in high school.
We did. And Señora Interante would be very disappointed to know I don't know how to say. He has an edge. Oh, please.
I hope she's not listening. Her Miami home, wherever she is now.
I'm sure she's somewhere on a beach. But you brought up a good point about the double standard. What if it was A-Rod, right?
I mean, if it was A-Rod, obviously, there'd be the front page.
It would be
the front page.
There would be outrage. I mean, A-Rod is the guy who yells "Ha!" as he rounds third base.
I'll tell you right now, Cal, I have less respect for Jeter's fake hit by pitch than I do for yelling that A-Rod yelled "Ha!" I can see doing that before I can see the faking of the hit by pitch.
I could not disagree with you more. I think yelling "Ha!" as you're running the bases is the worst possible thing you could do.
Maybe I didn't make myself clear. I disagree. I can see doing that. I don't think that's that bad. Listen, you should be able to catch a pop-up irregardless of me yelling "Ha!" I'm sorry.
But I find that to be so much more juvenile than acting out a hit-by-pitch.
What about punching the glove of the pitcher as he tries to tag you as you run down the line? Is that acceptable?
That would fall in between the two transgressions, but they're trumped by walking across the pitcher's mound.
Over the rubber, yes. That's the worst.
That's the number one.
It basically goes like this. Here, I'll run it down for you.
Go ahead.
The number one offense, betting on baseball.
Obviously.
Number two, running across the pitcher's mound. Number three, murder of any kind. Number four, I'd probably have to say, yelling "Ha!" And number five would be fake hit by pitch.
Where does corking your bat fall in the list of these things?
Corking your bat's not that bad anymore. You know, with the steroid scandals, I don't think you'd be, I remember there were baseball players who, like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't a few ball players, like, swing and then, balls flew out of the end of the bat?
Oh, yeah.
Handballs, and, like, I think those players continue to play.
Super balls, yeah. I think it actually happened to Sammy Sosa.
And, of course, the best thing about that is that you could so easily just say, "Oh, I picked up the wrong bat." And that's it. And then you're okay. Oh, you picked up the wrong bat? All right. Try to use your own bat next time.
Oh, my bad. Sorry.
Yeah.
I should put my name on it. Let me get a label maker.
In the same way that people now are saying, "Oh, you were injected with steroids. We saw you." No. I thought that was vitamin B12. Okay. That's all right then.
It's an honest mistake.
My
favorite quirk bat story was when Albert Bell was accused of corking his bat, and somebody from the Cleveland Indians crawled through the rafters at Municipal Stadium to go retrieve the bat. That was my favorite by far.
All right, hang on, we got a call here. Let's take a call.
Hello, you are on the air with Cal and Dr. E-Ray, ready to unload.
Hey there, guys. It's Dan from Manhattan.
Hey, Dan from Manhattan. How you doing? What's on your mind tonight, Dan?
I can't believe we're talking about Jeter as in this scenario. I mean, when we've got a decade of steroid cheats, and we've got the gamesmanship that's been going on in every sport for a century, it's a non-issue.
So
did you see it, Dan? Did you watch it?
Yes.
So you saw his entire song and dance where he, clutched his arm in pain and writhed around, and the trainer came out. They looked at it together. Meanwhile, he's basically whispering to him, "I'm okay. I didn't get hit at all." And that's fine. No problem.
They were going to make that call anyway.
You think so?
Yeah. Do you really think that the act influenced the call?
No.
Absolutely.
Which makes it worse, because I don't think it did. Which makes it worse because why did he have to act if they were going to make that call anyway?
Well, there's a big precedent in every sport for exaggerating episodes. They're slopping down for soccer players. There's all the sort of things that go on in the scrum on the offensive and defensive line. you know, I just don't think it's a major issue. What I do agree with you guys, though, is that if this has happened to A-Rod, this would be a major controversy.
Now, Dan.
Go ahead.
No, Dan, do you think it would have been, would you have had a problem with it if A-Rod had done this?
You know, it's hard to say. I don't know, because we think of these guys so differently. You know, they could conceivably do the same exact thing, but we would interpret it differently.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no doubt that A-Rod, it's a bigger story. I'll tell you the truth. You know, I watched this clip a bunch of times, and it's, first of all, it's so obvious he's faking. I mean, he looks, after he turns around with his hand, he looks at the umpire with this, like, kind of look on his face like, are you buying this? And then he goes into this whole routine. I mean, he doesn't once make a move towards first. And by the way, the sound alone was so obvious. It was a bat the ball was hitting.
Well, unless of course his wrist was made out of wood.
Well,
come on,
listen,
everyone knows Jeter's made of titanium.
I want to thank you guys for taking my call, and I didn't hear the NFL talk during the show tonight, but I wanted to leave off with this and get your thoughts. Went to the Jet game Monday night. Very unimpressed with the new stadium. Not an upgrade. Really ugly aesthetics from the outside. Non-functional bathrooms. They ran out of food. It really was a really disappointing experience, and there's just no signature to the stadium that makes it anybody's stadium. And, you know, for all the money, it's just truly, truly disappointing place. I'll leave you guys with that. Okay, thanks, guys.
Oh, thanks, Dan. Thanks for the call. And that's a great point about the stadium. And we were going to talk about that as in the fun load, about how going to an NFL game just isn't, you know, whether it's worth it anymore or the experience that you have in going to the game. Dan chimes in with his opinion of the new Meadowlands Stadium. Have you been there yet, Dr. Urey, or no?
No, I haven't been there yet, but from the people that have gone, it's been pretty you know, depressing to hear the reviews from it. You know, when people went to Yankee Stadium or Citi Field when it first came out, it was not a negative review that you could hear. I haven't heard anything good about the stadium. I really haven't.
No, and to a man, anybody that I know that's been to the stadium has had nothing but complaints about it. And that's where we want to start off right now with tonight's RTU Fun Load here on Ready to Unload with Cal and Dr. E-Ray Stat tonight. 1-877, I was going to give the old number, wow. 1-877-404-0820 is the number to call to chime in. You can talk with us about the question that we're going to ask is, what's it like to go to an NFL game? Is it worth it to go to an NFL game anymore with all of the advancements in technology and HD televisions and, like I was talking about before, the Sunday ticket on DirecTV and the cost associated with it? Ev, why don't you start? How do you feel?
And fantasy football, don't forget, which is, you know, a gigantic portion of Sundays for me at least. You know, the first thing we have to say when we talk about this topic is, you know, we have to put into context where we're calling from. We're from Texas. New York. I'm in Texas, apparently.
No, you are not. We're in New York.
We're from New York. And in New York, you know, going to a New Jersey stadium from Long Island is a real big pain in the ass. It just is.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, we got a quick call. Let's take a call real quick. Hold on.
Okay. Hello. Ready? Good evening.
Hello. Hello. The Swami's calling in.
The Swami.
Hello, Swami.
Actually, I'm in Texas. Is that a coincidence?
I knew someone was in Texas.
You messed me up, Swami.
Well, there you go. Hey, guys, has anybody checked my last week's predictions?
We took a look.
I think Steve told me that you were 7. Were you 7-7? Is that what you were?
7-7, but I like to set the bar high for the season. I hope everyone doesn't expect the same kind of magnificent results throughout the entire schedule.
Do you mean mediocrity at 500 like that?
mediocrity knows is not in the vocabulary of the Swami.
No, certainly not.
No, and I certainly, another word is gloat. There is no such word as gloat in the Swami's dictionary either.
Okay, well,
I threw that out years ago.
You eliminated that from your own personal dictionary, right?
Yes, as well I should. I think it was January 1st, 19-something was my resolution. No gloating again.
Wow.
It doesn't go well with my personality. But well, it was 7 for 7 nonetheless.
That 10 for 7 short, I'm sure you're anxious to build on that fantastic start. What do you got for us this week?
Well, I guess if we had to make selections, I have a couple of I have to take. I hate to do this to my, you know, to you guys in New York, but I'm taking the Pats over the Jets. I can't imagine, even at their home stadium, that they can rebound from last week's. I think I would call it a debacle, but it maybe wasn't even that good. Debacle does fit?
No, I was going to say that would be kind to a debacle, to call it a debacle.
Yes, exactly. So I'm going to go with the Pats over the Jets.
All right.
I'm going with Philadelphia over Detroit.
Okay.
I'm kind of leaning that way, even though, you know, Philly is playing in Detroit, but most people want to get in, get the game over, and get out, you know, with their, you know, bag under their arm. So that's good.
Wow.
It is Motown.
What?
I still like Arizona. I do like Arizona. I know they're playing Atlanta and in Atlanta, but I don't think it's going to be a gone with the wind situation. You know. So.
By the way, we've just lost our Detroit affiliate.
Well, you should. Those 7 people have just all gone over to another station. Yes.
Oh boy.
Tampa Bay. Let's go to. Let's take a Florida team, put them in Carolina against the Panthers, and the way I'm leaning towards Tampa Bay. I think the Bucs could do okay this week.
All right.
Let's see. How about we take a pick at Chicago and Dallas? I'm more than leaning. I think I'm falling all the way over that Dallas will go down to defeat.
You're picking the Bears over the Cowboys?
So am I.
That's wow.
Well, last week when I picked Seattle over these other guys, it had the same effect, I think. But nonetheless,
that's amazing. Right, now,
do me a favor here. Run through your picks real quick so we can get to the fun load. We got Stampede
going
to emerge and call it.
Okay, let's take Green Bay over Buffalo. Let's take Oakland over the Rams, and I'm going to give the Giants a nod this week over the Colts. There you go.
All right, you're going with the younger brother Eli in the game Sunday night.
Yeah, kinda, but you know that may be a little bit of fan enthusiasm also. But I'll go out on a limb. They should at least give him a decent game if everybody shows up.
All right.
Last but not least, take Jacksonville over the Chargers. Take that to the bank, and hope you guys, you know, enjoy the weather.
Yeah, well, we're going to hold you to that Jacksonville pick, Swami. So.
Yes, as well you should.
All right. Thank you very much. I hope everything is good in Texas, and we'll catch up with you next week, Swami. And we go from Swami.
By the way,
go ahead, segue, Dr. Eric.
Stampede, can you give us an update on what's going on in your neck of the woods?
Well. Hello, boys. Stampede here. Greetings from stormy Bayside, gentlemen. It looks like a demilitarized zone here. I'm actually walking the streets right now.
Oh.
Had to go to 7-Eleven to get some potable water.
Of course.
And it's crazy. No, seriously. Sorry to all the listeners out there for missing the show. We took about 3.5 hours to get home. We came home. There's a 40-foot tree in our driveway. Down power lines. We have no electricity. Our street is closed because it's impassable. and it's really quite a mess. It's a little disconcerting to come home to that after a 3-hour trek.
Is it true that they've dubbed your neighborhood District 9?
That's correct. That is correct. It is very District 9-esque. It's a little weird to just be walking around with a flashlight. Seriously, guys, there are down trees on every street. My street is impassable. The street next to ours, 212, is impassable. It looks literally like a tornado hit our street.
Well, you know what? It probably did, Steve.
Yeah.
The tornado probably hit your street.
I think it, in fact, indeed did. But
I guess it's better that you were not there during this weather, right?
Yes, that's correct. It was probably better, and thankfully that our car was unharmed in our driveway. A lot of people cannot say the same. We saw about 3 or 4 cars crushed already, just walking around, and so thankfully that was okay. And we're none the worse for wear. Like I said, just a little disconcerting to come home to, but we're okay. You know, I'm ready to contribute. I understand the show has probably been magnificent because you guys are the best.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. We've been trying our hardest here. Certainly, we're glad that you're okay. I just want to mention one thing real quick, you know, before we get into the fun load. You know, we do have the chat room open on the site. You know, people are in and out of the chat room all show, and we have a wonderful comment here from PJ from Jersey who basically says, quote, "Was Steve gone? I hadn't noticed." So.
Wow. You know what? There's a reason that PJ is one of our better callers, and that's not it. What he just said is not the reason. That was just a Con Ed gentleman telling us to watch the downed electrical wires in our driveway. So give me a second here, guys. Just going to step over some downed wires.
Okay.
A live electrocution on air.
This is live radio, though, everybody.
This is live radio, folks. We're okay. And you guys think I'm kidding, but I literally just stepped over the live wire. There's a piece of our fence that is here in the driveway.
Steve, real quick, is Anderson Cooper walking around the neighborhood?
That's correct. I saw Harry Connick Jr. building a house nearby. No, I would never compare it to the, of course, the devastation of Katrina. It's nothing like that. Thank God.
Would we be called, would we give a new name to the term shock jocks if you suddenly got electrocuted right now?
Yeah. Did you write that joke just now, or?
I have Bruce Valanche with me.
That's who we replaced you with tonight, Bruce Valanche.
Right. How much does he eat? Because I imagine if Bruce Valanche has been staying with you for a while, he probably has special dietary needs. He's a big guy. He's a hefty guy. He's a big, happy, you know.
He's lactose intolerant, but you know what? Surprisingly, a great house guest.
So listen, let's get to the, we are safely home. Want to let everybody know my wife is lighting the candles, literally, not figuratively.
Unbelievable.
And,
this is a first, I have to say. When we look back on this episode of Ready to Unload, we're going to call it the tornado episode, obviously.
Right, the tornado watch.
Yeah. But you called it the perfect time, Steve, because we were just getting into the fun load. We had a call, a great call, from Dan from Manhattan, who chimed.
Oh, okay.
He chimed in with his opinions of the new Meadowlands Stadium and basically couldn't have been more disappointed with his experience on Monday night. And I know that you were there at the new stadium on Monday night, and we wanted to get your thoughts on it as well.
Yeah, indeed I was. And of course, guys, in our pre-show conference, we had talked about what the fun load was going to be, so I do know what it was. And great to hear that Dan from Manhattan, who, what is he, six-time, long-time? Six-time caller, six-time holder. Went to the game on Monday night, and, I texted Dr. Ire, I texted you, Cal, several times about the disappointment that was the new Meadowlands Stadium. There was no atmosphere, there was no character to the place. I'm sure Dan from Manhattan echoed similar things.
He did. He said exactly the same thing, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, and it was frustrating because it's the opening of the stadium. It's the opening game for the most ballyhooed hype team in the history of mankind. You know, the team that talks more than, and I'm sure you guys have touched on this during the show, so if I'm reiterating, I apologize. But, you know, Dr. E-Ray keeps saying this. When has this ever worked?
Yeah.
When has this ever been a good idea? What the Jets are doing.
Steve, that's exactly how we opened the show. I remember Evan saying this for the last 9 months. When has this ever worked? And so far, not good.
Right. And the answer is none.
Never.
The answer is none more blacker. That's when it's worked. Like the Spinal Tap Black album.
That's right.
No, but so being at the stadium, Cal, you know, it really brought to my mind, like, my brother years ago decided to give up his season tickets. And, you know, part of that was the idea that, you know, the kids were getting a little older and he wanted to spend a little more time with them. The other part of that was to trek from Long Island to New Jersey to go to the game. If it was a 1 o'clock game, it took up your, you know, you didn't get home till, you know, 7 o'clock. You were gone from 8 o'clock in the morning. If it was a 4 o'clock game, you're not home until 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
Basically, it shoots an entire day. Now, that, of course, is a unique situation for New Yorkers because our stadium is in New Jersey. But, Cal, you know, the other reason my brother said years ago, well before Bill Simmons did, was that I got a 60-inch TV in HD.
Yeah.
And there's no line on my bathroom, you know, unless my, you know, then 10-year-old daughter is in the bathroom. You know, there's no line.
Right.
I was just going to say, Cal, it begs the question, why still go to games when the experience is so great at home?
Well, here's my thought. I was at the last game of the season last year, the last game, the Jets closed out the Meadowlands against Cincinnati on a bitterly, bitterly cold night. And you were there too.
Yes.
And the atmosphere of hanging out in the parking lot with 20 guys who couldn't feel their toes for 4 hours before the game, and then getting in that stadium, and the stadium was rocking with just frozen humanity. It was just rocking.
Right.
That right there, that's why I would still want to go to the games. You know,
absolutely. And Cal, you know what? Going into this segment tonight, I was going to sort of play devil's advocate because I re-upped my season seats for this year, you know, and I decided I wanted to go again, even though the PSLs were pushing me out and the experience at home with, you know, the flat screen high-def television is better and, you know, as far as that goes. And Dr. E-Ray, we'd love to get you in here too, but the idea of the fantasy, you know, you can keep track of your fantasy team and, you know, yeah. We've talked about fantasy football being so important, but you're right, Cal. For my money, to play devil's advocate for it, you can't beat that. You cannot beat that experience. I mean, the New England game last year, week two, was one of the best sports experiences I had at a game.
See, now here's, you got to remember though, I'm coming at it from the perspective of a guy that goes to like one game a year. You know,
right.
I look at the schedule, and you know, let's talk about that too. I go to one game a year because I can't afford to go to more than one game a year anymore. The price is just the price is just ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, no one can. And that's absolutely true, too. That's another reason to stay home. And this year especially, and it's, again, it's sort of unique to New York, but I'm sure it's going on everywhere, Cal, right? Because there's PSLs at other stadiums and stuff like that.
Oh, of course.
And of course, the economy's not just bad in New York.
Well,
the recession didn't just hit, you know, Long Island.
Steve, the home opener in San Diego is going to be blacked out this week.
Exactly.
San Diego.
Right. You're going to be looking at blackouts in a lot of places, Cal.
Absolutely.
A lot of places. And a lot of that has to do with the idea that the experience at home is better, A, and B, it's cheaper. You know, I mean, I was there on Monday night. Cal, you're talking about 10,000 empty seats, 15,000 empty seats.
Yeah, that's for a home opener.
For the home opener in a new stadium,
yeah.
You know, for a team that is as ballyhooed as you could possibly be, defining the word ballyhooed. You know, can we define the word ballyhooed?
The Jets.
Is ballyhooed a word?
Yeah, I think if you look it up in the dictionary, it's just a picture of Rex Ryan and Woody Johnson.
That's right.
With their arms around each other, you know?
Johnny ballyhooed. Yeah, but no, seriously, the cost is staggering, especially for the Jets and the Giants this year with the PSLs, and we've talked, endlessly, Cal, about the $60,000 for four seats.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Now, I just Dr. Erie, I wanted to get your points on this.
The other thing, I'm not sure if you mentioned it, Steve, but the other thing is that no one thought they needed a new one. You know, it wasn't like the stadium was falling apart in our minds. You know, we're basically, this idea of a new stadium was crammed down our throats. And to tell you the truth, if you're going to do that and make us buy PSLs, this stadium has got to be amazing. It's got to be unbelievable. Something like Dallas. It has to be.
I could not agree with you more. Dr. Ray, you just hit the specific nail on the head. You know, the overall, what we're talking about here, guys, is the idea that the experience at home for an NFL game is probably better than going no matter where you are. But if you want to get specific with what the Jets did and the Giants as well, in building a stadium that it has got to knock my socks off. And you know what? Socks securely on. It was underwhelming. And it is underwhelming. And the only thing that's remotely an upgrade, is the four large scoreboards at the corners of the stadium.
Right.
That's it. You know what? And I don't know why $1.6 billion. I mean, the parking and tailgating was a nightmare. It was a complete nightmare.
Really?
Because non-PSL parking are in certain lots because the Jets have non-PSLs in the upper deck. So, Cal, you're in one lot, but PSL people are in another lot. So now we have, like, segregation going on. You know, and now if you want to tailgate with people who have a PSL parking pass and you have a non-PSL parking pass, you got to take all your stuff over to them because they're close to the stadium. So we, Big Paulie and I, were making like the pilgrimage to Mecca with chairs on our backs and walking across these parking lots to go to our tailgate, and there were people going past us, going to the other parking lot, dragging grills, coolers. It was ridiculous.
What a disaster.
I mean, we looked like disenfranchised, you know, like like refugees. Like we were looking for the promised land. The tailgating
like Woodstock.
Promised land. Like Woodstock. Right? Exactly. Exactly.
Oh,
there's been some bad offense passed around, man.
Sorry,
that's terrible.
Sorry. Steve, what was the single most disappointing aspect of the stadium, of the new stadium?
Besides the play on the field, obviously.
Well, obviously, that would have been in any stadium.
Yeah, that's right. So that could have been in the parking lot at the King Cullen. That was just... the most disappointing aspect, I think, is the lack of character. I know, you know, it's a football stadium, right? So, Cal, it's 100 by 50, yeah. And it's a football stadium. You know, what's the difference? If you want character, go to a ballpark, right? Well, wrong. You know,
very wrong.
Yeah, it looks like, you know, it's green for the Jets, and there's green lights everywhere, and there's some video boards outside that are supposed to, and I guess it looks like a Jets stadium.
Well, yeah, it's green. It's a Jets stadium. It's green. There's green everywhere.
But there's no character at all to the place. It looks like a giant air conditioner, first of all.
I love that description.
The outside looks like it should say Fetter on it or something like that. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's the big AC. That's what we were calling it.
Nice.
But, you know, that's the most disappointing aspect, Cal. Now, Cal, let me ask you a question. I don't know if you've mentioned it, but you have tickets for this weekend, do you not?
I do. I have selected this Sunday against the Patriots as my one game that I'm going to this year.
Okay, so let's revisit. Now, I had an extra seat for this week, and I texted, knowing that you had a seat, you had seats already.
Right.
I got an extra seat yesterday because Big Paulie can't make it, and then you my nudge.
Oh, boy.
So I texted Dr. E-Ray.
Right.
And I said, I got an extra seat. Want to go to the game? Jets Patriots. Come on. You know, division rival. He said, no way.
I
now,
believe
why
that.
Was that? Why was that, Dr. Ray? Why was that?
Well, you know, a lot of it's some of the reasons we've talked about. You know, and I opened this segment before you called in, Steve, with basically saying that our experience in New York is very different than a lot of other teams across the country. Being a Long Islander, our team plays in Jersey. This is not very far when you think about the distance, but in terms of traffic and the commute, it's torture. I mean, you're talking basically about almost a 6-7 hour experience. Am I correct?
Probably more.
Yeah, with the game included, you're talking about it's a 10-hour day.
Right. It's a 10-hour day when you talk about tailgating and getting out of the stadium traffic on the way home. And the reality is that for me at this point, it's not possible for me to do that. You know, I got to be home. I got the young kid. You know, and then you throw in all the other things. I got a television that I can flip around and watch high definition and feel like I'm there, basically. I got, you know, fantasy sports, which I'm very much interested in. I can check the computer constantly. These are things that are important to me, that I like doing it. And just the hassle of going to the stadium, it's just not worth it right now. I really would like to hear what some other people across the country think.
Yeah, I agree. Especially, I'm sorry, Cal, I was going to say, especially given, as you said, Dr. Ray, like, we have special circumstances because of our situation in New York. Now, and I'm talking specifically about NFL games as well here. You know what I mean? I mean, if you're talking about a college football game, that's entirely different. You know, right. Texas plays Texas Tech this weekend, right? You know, well, I know these things now because I married a Texan. But Texas.
Apparently,
Texas,
I'm from Texas, too.
Right. UT plays Texas Tech, right? There's no chance anybody's missing that game.
No.
You know what I mean? You don't care. The experience of watching that college game on television can never match what it is in the stadium. Can never.
That's right.
But with the NFL, with the boys who play on Sundays, it's a different deal. I'm getting to the point where I feel like this is my last year with the season seats. I'd rather sit at home and or have a get-together with the guys.
Right.
I mean, that's the other aspect. To have the guys over, all the guys that I can't, you know, that don't have season tickets. And I can have, you know, 10 guys over to my house, sit there and watch it in HD, have our laptops open watching fantasy, completely geek out.
Right.
You know, go fantasy tool shed to the nth degree.
Right.
and you know, it's a better experience. And when it's cold out, you know, we're nice. Now, E-Ray, do you think they'd say that for Lambeau Field?
No, I don't think there's any chance of that because I think, you know, it's a very much like a college atmosphere over there. That's what I think.
Exactly. And I think that's why, as New Yorkers, we're a little, you know, it's a little different. Now, boys, are we going to do the Doctor Is In segment or what?
I'd like to. I think we got 7 minutes left in the show. I think we've expounded enough on why we do or do not like going to NFL games. And the Doctor Is In, Dr. E-Ray.
And I think we should, Cal, too, I think we should touch on it next week on Tuesday night when we're back, you know, hopefully I have power. But when we're back live, we should touch on it Tuesday night. I want to get your take on the new Meadowlands after you go, Cal.
Yeah, I will be willing to weigh in.
Yeah, let's do like a part two investigative report with Storm Phillips. Storm Hanna?
Yeah, next week I will be from the streets of Comac.
That's right. Part two of our investigative report, why go to a freaking NFL game anymore.
All right, Dr. E-Ray, the doctor is in.
Doctor's in.
All right, guys, I need a couple of diagnoses here. Cal, what do you think? Who's going to win this NL Triple Crown race here? Has anybody got a shot at this thing?
I think they all got a shot. Carlos Gonzalez, Albert Pujols, Joey Votto. I think none of them are going to win, but they've all got a shot, and it's made for an interesting race that three guys this late in the season all have a shot.
I need a diagnosis. Who are you putting your money on?
If I got to put my money on anybody, it's going to be Pujols, but I think nobody wins it.
All right. Hey, Steve, this NL West, you know, staying in the National League, it's a pretty tight race here. You got the streaking Rockies, San Diego clutching, San Francisco right there. Who's taking this division?
I think that San Francisco is going to come. Well, you know what? No, strike that. I think that Colorado is going to come all the way back and take it. I just think this team, the Colorado Rockies, first of all, I think San Diego's clutching, as you said. I think they can only clutch for so long. I think they're a very young pitching staff. And I think Colorado, when they get on, you know, on one of these streaks, they did it in 07. We saw them at the end of the year do it in 07. Ridiculousness. Troy Tulowitzki has three, you know, multi-home run games in the last week. These guys know how to do it and what to do, and I think Cargo is got the best shot at the Triple Crown because he's got the least amount of pressure. Nobody expects him to do it.
Hey, can he steal my diagnosis like that?
I'm just another doctor coming in for a consult. That's all.
It's a second opinion.
Speaking of consults and second opinions, I need both of your opinion on this one here. Reggie Bush gives back his Heisman. Do you think the 2005 winner should be vacated as they're doing, or should it go to Vince Young? Steve, let's start off with you.
I'll start off. I think it should go to Vince Young. I think it should go to somebody who is as deserving. He was second in the balloting, meaning you could have made an argument that year that he got a ton of first place votes. I think it should not be vacated and left vacant. I think it should go to Vince Young.
I agree. I think Vince Young should be the Heisman Trophy winner. The fall from grace for Reggie Bush is something for another day. It's just unbelievable where he was 5 years ago and where he is now. But going back to the Heisman Trophy, definitely Vince Young. I think Texas, the school that he played for, would be proud to have the Heisman Trophy as part of their university. And it shouldn't be vacated. You're going to look back and say, oh, 2005, nobody won the Heisman Trophy. Vince Young was arguably the best player that year anyway, so I would give it to him.
Agree.
That's very nice.
Definitely agree.
But look, did either one of you check out any of the Basketball World Championships?
No.
Absolutely not.
USA Basketball wins it. They win big in Turkey versus Turkey. I can't believe I'm actually saying that. But what does this say about the state of USA basketball without the big names like LeBron, Bosh, Wade? Is this all Krzyzewski right here, Steve?
You know what it says to me, Dr. Ray? It says one thing. Kevin Durant is really, really good. Really good. And I think he has a chance to be better than any of those guys that you just mentioned. I think he's if I'm going to watch an NBA game, that's the guy I want to see. I could care less about LeBron and Dwayne Wade and their little dream team there. I think Kevin Durant, let's just say it's a shame he plays where he plays.
I guess.
Very nice.
No, I was just going to say, I guess it's appropriate to say that Kevin Durant took his talents to Turkey. Right?
You could say that. Well, you could say that, yes.
Well, we only have a couple minutes left here, and I'd like to finish this off here with Calvi. I'd like to open a door here, Cal. I want to see how far you're going to go with this one. Cal, Clinton Portis backed off on a couple of comments he had this week regarding a certain female reporter, regarding the Jets. Do you have any opinion on this?
Oh, boy. My opinion, I don't think we have enough time to get to my opinion.
nor should we.
I'm just kidding. It's an equal opportunity. I believe male, female, children, whoever is a reporter is allowed in the locker room if they are professional.
Is there a large problem with children reporters as well?
Yes.
Just when the cast of the Fresh Beat band has to interview a football team.
Tiger Beat does a hard interview, I'll tell you right now. Cal, just to get serious with the question, do you feel that the locker room should be open to everybody? When basically it is just guys basically getting undressed and trying to get finished off with the game there.
Yeah, I think it should be open to everybody as long as the people that are entering the locker room respect the space for the athletes and are professional. I think that if they're doing their job, it's appropriate for anybody to be in the locker room.
Very nice.
Yeah, I totally agree, Cal. I think it's appropriate, and I think respect has to be shown on both sides. Respect the fact that you are a journalist and there to do a job, and respect the fact that the journalist is there to do a job. So I think it's on both ends, and I think respect is the key word there, boys.
That's it.
All right, is that all the time we have?
That is all the time that we have. Oh, sorry. You got one more, Dr. Ray?
No, I just want to give Steve the final unload sign as he's earned it.
Yeah, Steve, final unload.
Thank you, boys. Texas versus Texas Tech. I will be tuned in because I have to be now.
All right, Dr. Erie, got one?
I would have loved to hear Stampede talk about Jeter's fake bump tonight. Fake hit by pitch. I would love to hear that one.
I'll write an unload on it. I'll write a blog unload.
No, my final unload is it's good to hear Stampede's voice tonight. We had some rough weather in New York, but I'm glad he's okay. And we will check you again next Tuesday night with Ready to Unload back in our regular spot, 9 o'clock next Tuesday. For Dr. E-Ray Stat and Steve Stampietro, I'm Brian Calvi. Have a good night, everybody. See you next week. All right, we're out. Have you there?
Yes.
Okay, we're out.
End the show, baby.
All right. I'll get you back on Skype, all right?
All right.